supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm John Weber, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Dave Heller is off this evening. As we remember those who lost their lives in service to this country, Philadelphia's National Cemetery held a service by Philadelphia's Disabled American Veterans Council. WHYY's Kyrie Greenberg has more from this event.
The traditional Memorial Day service was hampered by the weather, but the rain didn't stop Karina Barrett from bringing her six-year-old daughter to the service.
Like, to me, it's important. Like, she didn't want to come this morning, but I'm like, you need to come. You need to see what it is. It's valuable. It's important. I think it's just so nice to take this one day to honor those that have done everything and given their lives to protect our nation.
Barrett was born in Ecuador and says her service in the Army, in addition to being where she met her husband, helped to cement her citizenship to the U.S.
A lot of people ask me, like, oh, are you ever going back home? And I'm like, this is home. I have my children here, my family, my career. This is home for me.
Kyrie Greenberg for WHYY News.
Tough love used to be a pretty common approach in educating children with behavioral and emotional issues, and often it was more tough than love. Act out, you get punished. Behave, you get rewarded. Ann Hoffman visits a school that has dramatically changed how discipline is done. The new approach takes into account what kids have been through.
Valley Day School sits in a green, suburban neighborhood in Morrisville, Pennsylvania, across the Delaware River from Trenton. Educational Director Ron Hall is taking me on a tour.
As we enter our gymnasium, and we have a volleyball competition going right now. And so we have the blue team. How's the blue team doing?
We're doing good.
The Valley Day School is a private school that gets reimbursed by the state for educating students who have behavioral disorders. And a few years ago, they adopted something called the Sanctuary Model. The goal is to provide a safe environment where students can heal from emotional and physical abuse and other traumas they've experienced.
When you look at some of the trauma histories of some of our kids, it's just really profound. I mean, we've had children here in the last 2 years that have spent time locked in dog crates, severe sexual abuse, severe physical abuse.
And that can compound existing diagnoses like schizophrenia, ADHD, and autism. Education Director Ron Hall says when he first came here 5 years ago, the school was calling the police a lot to work with kids who were excessively violent, or kids would be sent to a separate area in the school called in-school study hall and were punished in a way that was more punitive, he says. The kids would do a consequence and then return to their classroom. Hall says there wasn't a lot of discussion about what caused the incident, so the level of counseling and intervention was minimal. Kids still go there, but now
there's significant intervention in looking at what is the history of the child, what has happened, what are the circumstances that are leading to that behavior. Working with a child to understand how that behavior is a violation of the norms of our community.
So the question shifts from why did you do that to what happened to you? With us on the tour is an 11th grader named Catherine. Catherine has been here for 9 years.
Well, ever since I was 2 years old, I had a lot of problems, especially behavior problems. When I was in preschools and stuff, like, I was really bad, and I would flip desks, and I would throw chairs at other kids.
She says her school still struggles with fights, but things have changed a lot. Before the school started using the Sanctuary Model, here's what Catherine noticed.
Kids had harder times, like, coping with certain things when they would get upset and they didn't know what to do, so they would flip out.
Now, she says, kids have developed more strategies for emotional control.
Right now, the sanctuary has kids, like, using their coping skills and having them get through each period of the day.
While we're walking through the halls, Catherine sees an old teacher of hers who's since retired but comes back to do long-term sub work. Gladys Welber wants to make sure to tell me something.
Catherine came here when she was very young. I remember Catherine having a lot of explosions and having to leave the room. And she has grown to be a fine young lady, very responsible, very creative, and very sensitive.
When the teacher goes back into her classroom, I ask Catherine how it feels to hear that.
Well, that was pretty awesome. I am very flattered.
Right now, she's excited about two big things, a plan to move down south when she turns 18, and the school's upcoming talent show. In the library, we just missed kids practicing a drum piece, so teacher Joe Tyoon gives us a demonstration for the microphone.
What do you want to hear? Okay, here we go.
When it comes time for the talent show, Catherine is going to perform with her friend, a 10th grader named Bonnie. And before Bonnie came here about 2 years ago, she went to a public school where she says her behavior was unpredictable. She says that school didn't know how to handle her needs. Now, when she feels like things are spinning out of control, she follows a plan.
It's basically like five things that you can use to cope. Like, for example, mine has drawing, writing, listening to music, talking to Miss Stacy, and then using my mantra, which is keep it mellow.
Psychiatrist Stephen Berkowitz says for the sanctuary model to really work, schools and other institutions have to make sure everybody on staff is on the same page.
You know, it's work. It's ongoing work. It can't ever end.
He quotes a recent tragedy to underscore this point, Wordsworth Academy in Philadelphia, where a young boy died after being restrained by staff. This happened even though Wordsworth had adopted the sanctuary model.
And I think one of the problems at Wordsworth was, again, with turnover, and you know, it wasn't maintained. It wasn't consistently kept up.
Valley Day School's executive director, Jeffrey Axe, says that all systems require checks and balances and vigilance to remain true to their core commitments, and highlights the rigorous process the school underwent to get certified in the model. He agrees that for the model to work, sanctuary schools have to regularly and willingly maintain training, self-assessment, and evaluation by an outside authority. Berkowitz and Hall agree that all schools could benefit from the sanctuary model, but Hall says that education as an institution is conservative and slow to change.
Until we schools, not just a school, a specialized school like Valley Day, but all schools understand the impact of early childhood trauma, the efforts that we're making in educational change and reform are for naught. I mean, we really have to focus on the social emotional development of our kids before we see real serious growths in academic levels.
Back at the volleyball game, a boy gets upset and starts to walk out of the gym. He seems to be upset by the combination of a reporter watching him play and something that happened in the game. His teacher lets him start to leave, but then Hall notices a change in his demeanor and tells the coach that the student is ready to play after all.
Good. He's back. He's back. He's in the game.
And just like that, the kids continue their game. Ann Hoffman, WHYY News.
Two local longtime Christian ministries trying to think of new ways to reach Philadelphia's growing Russian community have come up with an unusual answer. WHYY's Dana DiFilippo has the story.
This is Radio Philadelphia. It's the city's only Russian language radio station. Tune in at 106.5 FM, and you might hear anything from Russian pop music to political debate to toothbrushing tips. And President Trump, whose relationship with Russia has dominated headlines? Yep, they talk about him too.
We have mixed views. We have people who love Trump. We have people who don't like Trump, really don't like Trump.
That's Alexandra Juchkovsky. He and his brother Vitaly are from the tiny Eastern European nation of Moldova. They started Radio Philadelphia nearly 2 years ago as an extension of their Christian ministry. They didn't have any experience in radio. Still, they rushed to apply for a license when the Federal Communications Commission invited nonprofits a few years ago to join the FM radio airwaves with a low-power license.
After a long wait, we got approved. And Vitaly, who is my assistant here, he called me and said, Alex, we got a letter from FCC. They're giving us a construction permit for the 106.5 FM LP station. And I said, this is April 1st. It's a full day. You think I believe you? You know, he likes to joke. And they thought it was a joke.
The brothers spent 18 months learning the business and converting an old church in Churchville, Lower Bucks County, into a radio station. Because it's low power, Radio Philadelphia only covers a 3-mile radius. But anyone can listen, thanks to online live streaming. Olya Prokopenko is a professor of Slavic studies at Temple University. She's been a guest on Radio Philadelphia and asks her students to listen to improve their Russian language skills.
Here, there are quite a number of families with older generation of Russians who have that tradition of listening to the radio, who are less comfortable with internet news and who don't read in English. So for them, Russian radio is a little link with their native home culture.
In fact, ethnic stations, newspapers, and websites like Radio Philadelphia are the fastest growing segment of American media, with more than 3,000 outlets nationally. Dana DiFilippo, WHYY News.
For nearly four decades, the classic diner Little Pete's at 17th and Chancellor Streets in Philadelphia has made round-the-clock scrapple and eggs for all walks of life. Today, they serve their last meals before the site is demolished ahead of construction for an upscale hotel. As WHYY's Bobby Allen reports, many diehard fans of Little Pete's came out to pay respect to one of the last 24/7 diners in Center City.
Little Pete's is named after Pete Katroubis, a Greek immigrant who started in the restaurant industry in Philadelphia as a dishwasher, where he had to stand on a milk crate to do the job. That's where he first got the nickname.
Because I used to work at a place, and the owner was Big Pete. He was like 6 foot something, and there was a manager there. So I was the busboy. So I was the little one. They used to call him Big Pete, Middle Pete, and Little Pete. So I got stuck with Little Pete.
And that name, written in red on a white sign, is what people walked under before sitting down at one of the booths or stools around a U-shaped counter that served generations of patrons. Construction workers, politicians, taxi drivers, janitors, you name it. It became a landmark in a corner of the city that went from seedy in 1978 to bustling now.
People that meet here, you know, they got married, they have kids. The kids are coming here, you know. A lot of stories, you know.
Waitress Margie Stern has heard many of them. She's worked at Little Pete's for 30 years. Wearing big gold hoop earrings and purple eyeshadow, Stern says the late night crowd has always been the most entertaining.
They're hungry enough where they go up to a complete stranger and take a french fry off their plate, you know, and sometimes it's funny and sometimes they're throwing french fries around.
The airborne fries are just the start of the memories. She says the conversations she's overheard between two people of totally different backgrounds sitting cheek to jowl have always been memorable. And there's even something about the smell of Little Pete's that will stay with her.
The greasy spoon, the diner smell. But you smell the bacon all day and, you know, potatoes, and it's just, it feels like you woke up on a Saturday morning to eat breakfast at home.
Storn says over the years, the staff has given many names to the regulars.
For instance, we have a customer whose name is John, and we call him Neither Either because he doesn't want to pickle or chip. So that's how we remember him. And then we have Peachy, like she's saying now. Peachy's here, you know, like it's just fun.
That inviting energy hooked Tracy Mueller early on. She went once on a lark, then returned, and she felt like she was family.
The second time I came here, the waitress knew my name. She knew what I drank before I even sat down. She's like, hi, Tracy, you like some iced tea? And I'm like, I love this place. It's like Cheers without alcohol.
What we need is affordable food that isn't a fancy restaurant where the culinary critics are going to come and criticize and break down a restaurant. This food is just good.
Andy Kaplan, who lives near Little Pete's, says removing affordable all-night diners from the city takes away a piece of Philadelphia's fabric.
We need more food where people recognize that a regular bacon, egg, and cheese sandwich is as good as the $100 cheesesteak at Barclay Prime. You need a little of everything to make a city diverse. Just like the people, the food needs to be diverse.
For others, the diner held special importance for the site's history. In 1965, gay rights activists staged peaceful sit-ins in what was then a restaurant called Dewey's, which had tried to ban gay customers. After the sit-ins, the restaurant's management agreed to stop discriminating.
And so for many gay folks, this is an important part of our history. And we've been coming here for years. Ever since it's been Little Pete's, it's really been a safe place for gay people to come after we went dancing, after we were out at the clubs.
That's Chris Bartlett of South Philly. Across the street from the diner, James Graham Jr. sells umbrellas and plays Christian sermons from his small radio. But before he sets up for the day, he comes to Little Pete's for an oatmeal with extra butter.
40 years I've been going over there to have breakfast most time. And the nice people, the best people in the world, you know.
Katruba says with the help of an online campaign to save Little Pete's, its closing was stalled for some years. But with property values skyrocketing, he knew shutting down was something he couldn't completely avoid.
When I started here in 1978, I was paying $800. Now I pay $10,000.
And he says that's for a 1,500-square-foot diner with no basement. Soon, the diner will be raised to make way for a 309-room boutique Hyatt hotel. But before the wrecking ball arrives, Katrubis, his family, and customers of all stripes are throwing a block party in front of the diner tomorrow.
You know, the people, you know, they got used to this place and they're gonna miss it. I'm gonna miss it.
Bobby Allen, WHYY News.
A new discovery indicates that moons may be more common than previously thought. Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute, joined Newsworks Tonight's Dave Heller to check in on the known inventory of sizable stuff in our solar system.
Derek, this is the discovery of a faraway moon, but still within our solar system?
Yes, this is one of the most interesting things about it and our solar system. And this one happens to be in one of the most distant regions of the solar system. It is 33 times the distance between the Earth and the Sun at its closest, and up to 100 times that distance. And it's really a moon that we're identifying as one of the dwarf planets of our solar system.
You know, we're learning that most stars have planets. In turn, do most planets have moons?
Almost every planet of our solar system has a moon. So that would lead one to believe that, wait, maybe moons are really much more common than we originally thought they were. And in this particular instance, we find that as we look out into the rest of the solar system, that many of the other objects that are in that region out beyond Uranus and Neptune, most of those objects seem to have moons, although maybe not the size of this one. This one's pretty sizable.
Is it a particular challenge for a dwarf planet to retain a moon?
Actually, that's all dependent upon the mass of the objects and the distances between them. And it could be that as long as those things are in the proper proportion and balance, no, it's not particularly difficult for a dwarf planet to have a moon.
Our solar system obviously has examples of ringed planets. Saturn comes to mind. What's this about a ringed star?
In this particular instance, we're looking at a fairly well-known star, a star named Fomalhaut. But this is a star that's actually fairly young. It's only 440 million years old. Our star, in comparison, is 5 billion years old, just about 5 billion years old for our solar system. And what we're learning is that in the early developmental periods of stars, just after a star is formed, it's common to find a ring of material encircling the star. After all, there was a lot of material from which the star was originally created, but there's also lots of dust and dirt and trash and leftover debris that didn't get incorporated into the star. Fomalhaut is one of the first stars at which we've been able to directly observe its planets orbiting around the star. We've been able to image one of the planets orbiting around Fomalhaut. So researchers are thinking that that planet and perhaps others are doing the work of herding all of this excess material into the ring surrounding the star.
Though this icy ring is interior to any of the planets.
Most likely it is, because this ring itself is 20 billion kilometers out from the star. So until we come across some additional planets orbiting around the star, we can at least say that the one planet that's there is probably lending significant energy to herding the materials together.
Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on NewsWorks Tonight.
That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Banyakov, Kimberly Haas, Ty Johnson, and Brett Rader. Find us on iTunes or listen back at newsworks.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm John Weber for NewsWorks Tonight.